Okay, grab the book of Daniel, open it up if you would. Got quite a bit of ground to cover. But before we get too carried away, this is kind of the, people go back to college in waves, you know. So I know that these girls are going back to college and like you're starting off in college. So it's, I'd like to pray for the Manderfield girls this morning if we could. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for Abby and for the blessing that she has been to our body over the years and the unique things that have happened this summer and the time that she's taken to be kind to younger women in our body. I pray, God, that you just would give her a great year. I pray that you'd capture her heart. And then I think about Emily, Lord, and just the adventure that she's heading out to and the nervousness and the excitement and the readiness and then just the idea that it's going to be a big change. So I pray that you would bless her and give her grace. I pray that you would keep her. And I pray that you would give her good connections like you have given to her siblings. And just pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Yeah, you're welcome. Man, everybody's leaving me. At least my wife's sticking with me. Doggone it. Let's see. Speaking of my wife, do you have the wife of my life. The character of Daniel, I mean, all these characters we're looking at, there's so much to talk about. So you have to kind of get focused on what's important. So I was thinking about all of the different things that you can learn from Daniel's life and the people that he knew. But the vision is what comes to mind when I think about Daniel. He not only had a vision for the future, kind of beyond almost anybody in the scriptures, he also had a vision for his life, within his life. And he was always able to consult God. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. But mainly, you know, what does that have to do with us and how we can experience that together? So Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel. I asked myself a question. Is there a pattern? As you watch the book start to unfold, we're going to cover, you know, just different parts of it. I've got some news headlines, news flashes from the book as well, but we'll get to those in a second. Is there a pattern? And this is all in chapter 1. So let's just turn over to Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. The third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. He brought them to the land of Shinar, so that's up to the north in Babylon, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered, I can't pronounce that, the chief of his officials to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and the nobles. Youths in whom was no defect, who were good-looking, all right, This is like such an American thing right here. They were good looking. They showed intelligence in every branch of wisdom. They were endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge. And they had the ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered them to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. So everybody has roots, right? You have roots in life. We're just very fortunate because we have a tendency to live in a very free society where we don't get uprooted very easily, especially in our lifetime and since the founding of America, we've been in a pretty peaceful place. But a lot of people get uprooted, and they get taken to different places, and things happen to them that they have no control over. I don't know how much compassion you feel about what is happening in the Middle East right now, but it's heart-wrenching and it's tragic. And you look in the African continent and you even look at some of the things that are happening over in Europe. And, you know, to enjoy the freedom that we enjoy is just an incredible thing. But sometimes our roots, even though we have the roots that we do, our story begins to evolve in a way that we might not have chosen because things are out of our control. So in asking if there's a pattern here, I think about my own roots. I think about the things that I chose, the things I didn't choose, but they're a part of my story. And God has worked in my story to get me where he wants me to go, just like he did with Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. Well, in the context of that, and I would have loved to have been a believer as a teenager. I mean, how cool would that be? The struggle that would be there, but just the opportunity for reward. I mean, I didn't even think about God when I was a teenager until I was 21 years old. But here Daniel is a teenager, a very young teenager at this particular point, probably about 12 or 13 years old, because this is before things ramp up and before he's trained. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank, so he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Now, this is really interesting, because if you look at how Daniel was raised, and this goes back to his roots, what made him think of this? I mean, your average, everyday, you know, red-blooded American or Jewish boy, what would you expect him to do? You know, you'd get the angle on the situation. You'd try to figure out how to get the most out of the situation. You're not going to draw attention to yourself. You're not going to stand up and say, hey, I only want vegetables. Now, God granted favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. So you've got the conflict of the roots, and in the roots, you've got God there with Daniel, because Daniel is acting upon his roots. Where do you think he figured this stuff out from? How did he know all about God by the time he was 12 or 13 years old? Well, he had a mom and he had a dad. He had a context. He had a community. And even though he was ripped up from this community, he took his community and he took his family and he took his God with him. And can you imagine if Daniel had not taken his God with him, you know, into the captivity? And I'm sure there were people who didn't. But we get to have insight into the four that apparently did, and they're immortalized for us through the scriptures. So you got the roots, you got the courage, and then you've got the favor, which we just looked at. So that was a result of it, because God was behind everything. And this is true of all these stories in the scriptures. God's favor is there when people turn their hearts toward God. Then you've got the growth. Pop down in verse 17. As for these four youths, and so this word is still a very young word, because they're because they're not a lot of time has gone by so far. God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. And Daniel, in addition to being a smart guy, because apparently he was a smart guy, he also was given the ability to understand all kinds of visions and dreams. Now, I would postulate to you that it wouldn't have been enough for Daniel just to be smart. All you have to do is read this story and see that it was the dreams and it was the visions and it was his connection to God that made Daniel Daniel. That's true of you too. That's true of me. That's true of us in our story. It's our connection to our God that distinguishes us from other people. You know, I don't feel like the smartest or the best looking or the most successful, and I've never felt those things in my life. But I have felt very special in my relationship with God. And because of that, I can count on God to watch over my life and to speak to me. And so you've got that growth happening, but not just in a human way, but also in a spiritual way. And then you also have the elevation. Look in verse 20. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them, get this, 10 times better. They were 10 times wiser. So take that ingredient. Think about where you fit in academically. You know, maybe you're like a 4.0 kind of a student. I'm sure we have a lot of those people here. And that's great. Or maybe you're a 3.5 student, or like me, maybe less than that, a little bit further south than that. But you take that and you think about, well, where will that get you? Where will your intellect get you? And it may get you along the road in good ways, far down the road in some ways, but the reality is that your connection with God is going to take you much further than your intellect or your skills or your natural abilities. Now think about how goofed up that is as far as our culture is concerned. We've totally de-emphasized the idea of being able to hear God's voice and be directed by God, and we've elevated, you know, literature and academic wisdom and skill sets and whatever, and those are the things that have begun to define us. And that part of it goes back to what I was talking about at the beginning. We enjoy those kinds of freedoms because we live in the world that we live. look at these guys, where they had to work out their academic freedoms. So I ask a question, is there a pattern here? And I'd ask you to look at your life and think about those things, the roots, the courage, the favor, the growth, and the elevation. Do you understand? This isn't just how God works in Daniel's life. This is how God works in his children's lives. So this is a picture of that. And I think it's worth thinking about from your perspective. I mean, are you trying to find your place in the sun based on your academic and your learning ability or your skill sets or your looks or whatever it might be? Or with the fact that you are connected with the King of the universe and you can hear his voice? So just a thought. So, great story, but what's a person without his friends, right? Or what's a person without her friends? Chapter 2, look down in verse 12, big trouble. Because of this, the king became indignant and very furious and gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. So a decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they looked for Daniel and his friends to kill them. So this is guilt by association, but how are they going to be delivered in this situation? Well, look down in verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and he informed his friends. So when he heard what was happening, he went and talked to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, there are their new names, about the matter, so they might together request compassion from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his friends would not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Now, ultimately, when you read the story, you don't even know how many wise men. I mean, I don't think they were getting them all together to kill them at one time. I think it began to be a process because they began to look for Daniel and his friends. So we don't even know how many of the wise men of Daniel's time didn't make the cut. It was a genocidal thing that was happening, and they were all being pursued. So he goes to his friends, and together they consult the God of heaven and ask God to answer them and to help them. And this is so cool. They're requesting compassion. And then verse 19, then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in the night vision, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So the answer comes from God. And again, the vision part of it is what delivered them. It wasn't merely his wisdom. So you've got his wisdom and his abilities, but you've got also his ability to hear God's voice. And on top of that, he had friends who also were able to look for God's voice together. And they did, and they received a pretty fast answer. I mean, I suppose, you know, you'd be hoping for a quick answer in that kind of a situation because they were looking for Daniel and his friends. What's really cool about these guys and why you know they were spiritual teenagers, verse 28, however, there's a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will take place in the latter days. This was your dream and the vision that you had in your mind when you were on your bed. As for you, O king, while on your bed, your thoughts turned to what would take place in the future, and he who reveals mystery has made known to you what will take place. But as for me, and I love this, because, you know, again, here's an opportunity for Daniel to elevate himself, but what does he do? But as for me, this mystery has not been revealed to me for any wisdom residing in me more than in any other living man, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to you, O king, that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. Pretty cool. So you got the trouble, you got the prayer, you get the answer, and then how does Daniel respond? He gives glory to God. He gives honor to God. I mean, this Nebuchadnezzar is one of the most powerful kings that has ever lived in all of history. And Daniel had a significant impact upon the reigns of the kings as well as Nebuchadnezzar's son. Chapter 3, verse 16, you look at the resolve. And this is in the wake of this. It's like, you know, you just can't get everything worked out because there's always something around the corner, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to give you an answer concerning this. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from your hand. Verse 19, Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I'm assuming it was a look of displeasure on his face, which you don't want to get when you're around a king, apparently. I don't get this because I've never lived in this kind of an environment. But I mean, really, the king could look at you cross-eyed, and everybody around you knew that you were done, just by the look on his face. I mean, how weird is that? He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. He was so angry that he was going to barbecue these people, and he didn't want them just to fry. He wanted them to evaporate. He commanded certain valiant warriors who were in the army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to cast them in the furnace of the blazing fire. Where's Daniel? Where's Daniel? What was Daniel doing? I can only assume that Daniel was on his face before the living God, begging God to spare his friends. He doesn't even show up in this context, but you know from what we've already seen that that's what he was doing. He commanded certain valiant warriors who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and order them to cast into the furnace of the blazing fire. Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats. These are the people that are doing the dumping. Their caps and their other clothes, and they were cast in the midst of the furnace of the blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the fire killed those people who had all of that clothing on. I bet you they wish they would have had some of those, you know, hazmat kind of things that would have protected them, like a fireman. The flame of the fire slew those men who carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I have in parentheses here, this fire was hot. But these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of the blazing fire, still tied up. So some of the artist representations I've seen are people looking down from above, which doesn't make a lot of sense because you think the heat that would come up out of there would really be something. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded, and he stood up in haste, and he said to the high officials, "Was it not 3 men we cast bound into the midst of the fire?" And they replied, "Yes, O king." And he said, "Look, there are 4 people walking around in the fire, and they're walking around without harm. And the appearance of the fourth is like the son of the gods." And I don't think it was Daniel that was there. I think it was either the angel of the Lord, or it may have been the Lord himself, depending upon how you look at that theology. So, friendships. So I just wanted to highlight a couple things. Like I said, there's so much. The first thing is that, is there a pattern about how God works? And you and I need to look at our lives, and rather than being freaked out when certain kinds of things happen, it's more about our response to the things that happen rather than the things that actually happen themselves. And second of all, what kind of kingdom friends do you have? Are you a part of a group like Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego that could count on each other, to have each other's back and to go before the living God? Now, I had a few headlines, and these are great stories if you haven't read them. First of all, king eats grass and he lives to tell. This whole thing, again, he's the king of kings. You know, I think he even eclipsed Solomon, you know, for actual territory and actual power that he had. So here you've got the Gentile king Nebuchadnezzar, and I love this. Look over in chapter 4. This is at the end of his journey. You know the story. He ends up losing his senses, and he ends up eating grass. Chapter 4, verse 36. And what's cool about this, too, is that Nebuchadnezzar is telling his own story. This isn't somebody talking about what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. He was the king. He got to be a part of the book of Daniel in his own words. "At that time," verse 36, "my reason returned to me. My majesty and my splendor were restored to me, for the glory of my kingdom, and my counselors and my nobles began seeking me out once again," because they recognized that I wasn't a crazy man with like really long fingernails and uncut hair and running around like a wild man, "and I was reestablished in my sovereignty, and surpassing greatness was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, take my word," you can take this to the bank, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are true and his ways are just, and he's able to humble those who walk in pride." Nebuchadnezzar, is he going to be in heaven? It'll be interesting, won't it? Did he learn the lesson? Did he learn the Job lesson? Did he learn the Jesus lesson? That humility is the door into the kingdom of heaven? We'll find out. But I mean, can you imagine? I picture heaven being a series of gatherings, you know, and you go into a room and, you know, oh, those are the people that were carrying the water, or filled the water pots when Jesus turned the water into wine. Because they were empty, you know. We were reading that yesterday, and they filled them up, and Jesus turned them into wine. Can you imagine if it was six people or eight people? Certainly they went home and said, honey, you aren't going to believe what happened at the wedding today. So I picture heaven being an opportunity to encounter stories, and I think we may be surprised at who we end up walking into a room, and it might be like a big Nebuchadnezzar party, you know, and tonight Nebuchadnezzar is going to tell his story once again, and you're going to get to hear it from his perspective. Next, the headline, off the wall, son learns nothing. Son learns nothing. So this is kind of sad, really, because Nebuchadnezzar ends with that, but Belshazzar, the king, holds the feast. You know all about the handwriting on the wall, right? 5:17, Daniel answered and said before the king, keep your gifts for yourself. I don't want your money, buddy. Give your rewards to somebody else. However, I will interpret the inscription that is on the wall. Look down in verse 22. Yet you, his son, Nebuchadnezzar's son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew your father's entire story. You watched it unfold. You know, where was little Belshazzar when his dad was out eating grass? You know, what happened to his life? None of the nobles were seeking out his father anymore. I mean, what a weird life he would have had. And what an opportunity to observe and to see and to grow and to know. Yet you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all of this. But you've exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house before you. You and your nobles, your wives, and your concubines have been drinking wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold and iron and bronze and wood and stone. They don't see, they don't hear, they don't understand. But the God in whose hand your life's breath and all your ways you have not glorified. What a contrast. What a contrast. I mean, it just shows the difference between a godless, secular, idolatrous worldview and one which is a spiritual worldview. So it's really a shame that he didn't learn anything from his dad. Then I wanted to do a sports update, too. This one's pretty obvious. Daniel 1, Lions nothing. And what a great story. But, you know, you're really familiar with it. But I went through it again a couple of days ago, and I thought, this is so awesome. I mean, think about what it would be like to be Daniel. Think of what it would be like to be the king who didn't want to put him in there. Think about what it would be like to be the people who accused Daniel to get him in there and have you and all of your family, including your children, thrown in and having their bones be crunched up by the lions that had done nothing to Daniel. I mean, how would that impact the people around you? You know how it would impact the people who fell in, obviously. Just a couple minutes left. Final headline, Visions of Tomorrow. And this is one of the most, it's interesting that he's one of the greatest characters in the scriptures, but he also has one of the most sweeping prophetic views of what's going to happen even after you and I. I mean, God has spoken through Daniel to be able to see visions and wonders that have even begun to, well, they've begun to occur, but they haven't occurred yet. And I kind of looked through that. And we'll just kind of finish off with this. Turn over to chapter 7, verse 9. I'm just trying to whet your appetite to read in Daniel this week. 7, verse 9. And I think this is the passage that Dennis was talking about during communion. I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His vesture was like white snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was ablaze in flames. Its wheels, Ezekiel, were flames of fire. And a river of fire was flowing and coming out from before him. And thousands upon thousands were attending him. And 10,000s times 10,000s were standing before him. The court sat, the books were open, and I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. And that's another story. Verse 13. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming, and he came up to the Ancient of Days, presumably the Father, and he was presented before him. And to him, to Jesus, the Lamb, was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. And this is one of the other latent benefits of the book of Daniel when you read it. It is so filled with authentic and accurate praise, authentic and accurate honor of God. It's almost like Daniel has been given the ability to look in to see the glory of heaven itself, like we just described here, and he's been able to capture it and bring it back through his visions so that we can understand it, you know, we can see it. So that led me into a little study. I guess I'll have to postpone this to a later date or whatever. But I looked at the passage in Ezekiel, the prophecy in Joel. It shall be in the last days, God said, I'll pour out my spirit on all mankind. And that's talked about in Acts chapter 2. Matthew 24 and 25, if you want to understand what's going to happen, go there. You want to start with the that part of the Olivet Discourse, because Jesus knows more about what's going to happen than anybody does. So if you're going to look at what the future is going to mean, you want to start in chapters 24 and 25. Hebrews talks about it. Peter talks about it. And in the book of Thessalonians, it's amplified for us to understand more. So there's a lot of information about the day of the Lord. And the day of the Lord is the second part of the 70th week of Daniel. Okay? And that 70th week has a point in the middle of it where it begins the great and awesome day of the Lord, and that's the story of the book of Revelation. That's how it all ties together. So it's pretty cool. A lot of great things in Daniel. I was going to sing that. Daniel was leaving tonight on a plane. Because I couldn't think of any, you know, spiritual songs. So, but I don't think I'll do it. I mean, this isn't very edifying at all. Each week, you get a post on Monday or Tuesday. So our next character is going to be David. It's there for teachers, for parents, for teens, and for all creakers. So, you know, there's stuff to listen to there. There's stuff to look up. It should make it just easy for you to immerse yourself in whatever character or whatever passage that we're looking at. And, you know, you guys will be able to look it up online. And it'll be there for you too, as well. So, and then also there'll be those of you who are involved in the streams book. That's also posted as far as which days, and talk about the details that are there.